This portion of the show is brought to you by Native Roots Trading Post. This year, starting Thursday, August 25th through Monday, September 5th, we are going to be at the Minnesota State Fair, and we're really excited to have Native Roots Trading Post there this year. Again, from Thursday, August 25th through Monday, September 5th, we hope to have a lot of people come down and visit us.
Yeah, hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and hopefully we're on the air here. We discuss local and national Native news and events, and there's a lot of news coming up here that really are affecting us as Native Americans. And we also will have Robert Lilligren on and Wendy speaking on our sacred animals. So before we get any further, let's go to Ogama with the news. Welcome, Ogama.
Hello, Buju and Ian, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuakwe. I am talking with the mothership here, and they're looking for the source of the issue right now. So hopefully they'll get it resolved here soon. They do believe we're on air at the moment. So with that, I'm going to go ahead with my news. Today, though, I want to mention before the holiday weekend, Native Roots Radio, myself, Robert, and Wendy, we all work really hard to try to bring you news that is outside of the norm. And if you have a minute or you have a little, you know, a spare $2, head over to patreon.com/Native Roots Radio Network if you can to offer us a little support. We'd really appreciate it, and we'll give you an on-air shout out when we see your name come up on our Patreon. That would be great. It is going to be the 4th of July, but I keep seeing memes around that the 4th of July is going to be canceled because of a lack of independence, which is kind of where I'm heading off the first part of my story today. This got overshadowed with the reversal of Roe versus Wade, but the Supreme Court ruled on Thursday that the Environmental Protection Agency does not have the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions without specific authority from Congress. So the Supreme Court sided with oil companies and extraction industry right now. So this raises major questions on the power of government in the age of climate change, according to Indian Country Today, and they're definitely not wrong. And the vote was 6-3. Obviously, the conservatives were in the majority on this one. And basically, they're saying the Clean Air Act itself does not give the EPA the explicit authority to limit greenhouse gases, and that Congress must speak clearly on this subject, which we all know they have not. The Chief Justice called this decision a major questions case, and that is the notion that federal agencies cannot answer questions of vast economic or political significance without specific legislation from Congress. Basically, in this case, Congress enacted the Clean Air Act, but now the law does not include the EPA's regulations. So the Obama administration had encouraged the EPA to set out rules that promoted a generational shift away from coal-fired power plants as fuel sources, even into natural gas, things that have slightly less impact on climate change. But now that the EPA won't have any authority to actually do anything about greenhouse gases, we're in a really hurting place right now. Indian Country Today asks, will tribes be the last line of defense, or are they going to opt for more coal development? So basically, they interviewed the regional director for the Indian Collective, the Southwest Regional Director for the NDN Collective, and basically said a lot of tribes have modeled their own regulations on the EPA regulations, and that this is going to be really confusing, and it could lead to tribes attempting to increase coal production now that that regulation is no longer going to be in process. And now it's a challenge for the environmentalists to fight harder. So that is people like us here on Native Roots Radio. That is people like you out there who are tuning in and listening to us and telling your representatives and everybody that you know that climate change is in fact real, and it is going to affect us in a very real way. It's going to continue to affect us in a very real way in the very near future. So this is definitely something that we can't wait. Climate can't wait. Right, Robert?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just really upset still about people aren't going to, you know, don't pay attention to the news like we do. And normal people are out there working and trying to raise a family and do things like that. But we're paying attention to the news. And people are not going to know how this affects them for another month from now that aren't paying attention. And right. It's going to really fire up, and hopefully in the next 5 months, fire up the cause here and get these lunatics out of office. And, you know, let's get some more people in that Supreme Court, because I just heard a good saying. I think it was from Roger Ebert, or who was he said he said abort the court, and that's what I say.
I agree with you there. So my next story, I want to raise up another voice. Melissa Olson, who's writing for NPR News' North Star Journey, did a really fantastic story that just came out today about the University of Minnesota probing into its history with Native people. So to kind of paraphrase, the federal government hung, obviously, 38 Dakota men from Mankato, 38 plus two, and the gallows on December 1862, and that brought an end to the U.S.-Dakota War, but it also triggered a huge financial boost for the University of Minnesota. So I guess dubbed the Minnesota Windfall, sales and leases of parcels taken from the Dakota people raised nearly $580,000 for the university when it was young, which was part of a massive grab of wealth that came from Native people and was given to American universities. So apparently this piece of American history had largely remained hidden, but two investigative reporters have been digging into how colleges benefited from what was called the Morrill Land Grant College Act of 1862, which was signed into law just 6 short months before the Mankato hangings. Now the University of Minnesota is working to review its treatment of Native people going back to its founding in 1851. Researchers with the project are expected to release a report later this summer, but it's probably going to be really painful to read. And one of the people who is working on that report said that they had found nearly 11 million acres of land that had originally belonged to indigenous tribes and communities was acquired by the United States through about 250 different treaties. Many of them became outright land seizures, and many of those treaties were backed by violence, and those lands have been basically divided up to become 52 universities. High Country News revealed that those land grants raised about $18 million for university endowments, with unsold lands valued at more than $5 million. If you adjust for inflation, that's about $500 million today.
Well, so we had a guest, Ogama, on when you were off about the removal of the Ho-Chunk. And what they did was they removed and sold them to the highest bidders down in the Blue Earth area, and just took their crops and everything and put them on the train and sent them away, or put them on the boat. And so that's – I can believe it, and that's amazing that this is coming up finally.
Yes. And I'm glad that it's coming up, and I'm really grateful for the, of course, women who are working on this project, including Misty Blue and Garagiola and Adriana Goodwin, who are working on this project. It's called the Truth Project at the U of M. And, I'm really grateful for them and the work that they're going to continue to do on this. And from the article Melissa wrote, it sounds like they are very hopeful that this will lead to some reconciliation further down the line, but it is going to be a while. I guess some more national news. I wanted to touch base here. The Haudenosaunee people. The Haudenosaunee Nationals have changed their name. The lacrosse team were originally called the Iroquois Nationals. And the name Iroquois is a French variant on the term snake and was given to them by the Huron people. And it's actually a derogatory term. So since so many of their people had lost their language, like so many of us, through forced assimilation via government policies and boarding schools, the English name Iroquois stuck, but they are taking it back. And now the lacrosse team will be called the Haudenosaunee Nationals team. So that's really exciting.
It's just like Ho-Chunk changed from Winnebago. Good for them.
Exactly.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. Thanks, Ogama. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Navigating COVID while protecting yourself can be difficult. Fortunately, there's a hotline you can call with any questions. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on vaccines, booster shots, and testing sites. Right now, booster shots are available to anyone over the age of 18 for those who are eligible. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline can also help with housing, food, medical, and educational support. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, booster shots, or testing, please call 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice, and MN stands for Minnesota.
Yes. Hey, awesome. Hey, we are here with Robert Lilligren, NADCE, and, you know, I just saw Robert today and had a great conversation with him. So hopefully we'll have something to talk about tonight. No, I'm just kidding.
I hope you're not all talked out.
You saw that caffeine I was drinking. So, you know,
I was worried in the seat.
I crashed hard before the show. So hopefully I'll be okay now. But wow, Ogama led off with the news. It's just a nationally, I don't know if people are going to feel the effect of what the Supreme Court, you know, abort the court, what they're doing. And you know, because they're not news junkies like us, Robert, they're going to realize pretty soon that, you know, they're going to have an investigation on them in Wisconsin or somewhere that, you know, their miscarriage might have been an abortion and they're going to go to jail. Who knows?
The legitimacy of the court certainly is in question, right? And as one of our three co-equal branches of government here in this country, it kind of puts the whole democracy thing at risk. And with the other things going on in the January 6th hearings and things, this is a crisis of our democracy. And really, I never thought I would live to see something like this.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like there's things that we could do and we haven't done. And there's, you know, we don't have enough senators because some of them are playing Republican, and I'm a broken record. We need to get the vote out, but you know what? We need to get the vote out.
We do need to get the vote out. It was great seeing you today, and I just wanted to say, hey to Ogama, to Wendy, nice to see you, bonjour. And but it was so good to see you in person today, Robert. And we did. It was kind of just talking like this, right? We both said, I hope we have something to talk about tonight, you know, but you know, one of the things that within our organization, Native American Community Development Institute, NACD, but in the world and in the community and our families, you know, this is triggering, right? This has been traumatic years, you know, the pandemic, George Floyd was murdered right here, you know, what we've been living through. And, you know, and I was just kind of feeling like we're kind of coming out of this. I was really processing some of that, taking time to kind of be with my own trauma the last few years. And all this string of Supreme Court decisions that are just really undermining decades, centuries of law. If you look at the Oklahoma versus Castro Huerta suit, that's in really an attempt to invalidate tribal sovereignty fundamentally that's been in place for 200 years. So we're in uncharted territories, and getting out and voting is it. And one of the things at NACTI that we really embrace and try to feel empowered about is we do a lot of that, empower, you know, through our Make Voting a Tradition. You know, we're out educating Native folks, engaging Native folks, getting them to pledge to vote, working, you know, statewide and with national partners to do just that. So at least we feel like we're doing something, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't remember 2 years ago, and I don't know if you remember Robert or Ogama or Wendy, but I know when I was still a high school teacher that people that started the school year that were 17 were going to be able to vote, and there was something like 4 million people across, or I don't remember what the number was, but it's substantial, and we need to reach out to our young ones because they're not used to this racism craziness.
Right, and that's the approach we take through Make Voting a Tradition is exactly what you just talked about, Robert, is we engage young people especially who then engage their older relatives to vote, and it's super cool and hopefully a little more effective. You know, it's hard sometimes for Native folks to see the benefit of voting directly. And then when you get these 17-year-olds who will turn 18 before the election, or, you know, 16-year-olds who will be 18 in a couple of years, if people vote at 18 years old, they are so much more likely to continue to vote throughout their lives. I mean, the statistics are staggering. And so getting people to vote young and getting people to bring others to vote so they're amplifying their voice at the polls.
Yeah, I haven't missed an election since Jimmy Carter ran for president.
That was my first election, Robert. That was my first election, too.
Yeah. Ogama, did you have a statement or question?
You know, I do have a statement. Robert, you sent me this awesome link from Decolonize Myself on Instagram, and this video of this person is saying that, you know, the people who are in power right now don't care about anybody. And it's because individualism has been prioritized above everything else in capitalism and white supremacy culture right now. And basically that means physically, emotionally, and all levels. But the antidote to that is interdependence, community, mutual aid, and interdependence. And it's really great to talk about voting. But I did see a meme today and it said, "Help, they're stabbing me in the face." And somebody is an onlooker and they say, "You better get out there and vote."
Right.
You know, and that's kind of how these things feel, is that you're being attacked and it's hurting you right now in this moment. And you have so many people talking to you. You got to get out and vote. And it's important to vote. It really is. And that is definitely something we need to do. But we also need to remember to that antidote and to be in community with people, too.
Agree, and thanks for sharing that, Ogama. That is really powerful. And we were talking about this as well. And I don't know if you all know Judith LeBlanc of Native Organizers Alliance, but she's active on a national scale, teaching people to organize, teaching people to build collective power. And this is a challenge for us, right? As we talk to our relatives, they have other things. They have someone stabbing them in the face, right? Or they have voted and seen that hasn't really had the impact they were hoping for. And Judith said these words, which I think are so great. She said, "Voting is a flex of our power, in that it's not the solution, but it's building that collective power. And it's it helps to disperse and mitigate abuse." So yeah, it isn't going to stop that person from stabbing you in the face, but it's going to show that you have others standing with you and that you have the ability to mitigate it. And I just love that image of a flex of our power.
Yeah. And, as one of our listeners just said, they love it. I love that too. I love this conversation. Because it, you know, we talk about, on here, keeping people accountable. And those are things too, but you know, you can't impeach people, but you cannot elect them again. You know, there is that. So, but it's just, We really, you know, I'm very progressive, and we really need to first of all, get the Democrats back in, and second of all, get progressive people in, Robert.
I agree. And right now we're living under minority rule, right? This is not the voice of the majority of the people of this country. And so if we flex our power and build collective power through voting, then we can have a government that really actually represents us.
Yeah, how did that happen when 70% of the country is for women's right, per se, of their own body, and now we have six people that are saying no, 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 and then also these so-called Christians, you know, nowhere in the body does it say any of this stuff. In the Bible, does it say any of this stuff? I mean, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I've been always interested and curious in that because I like to believe people aren't really hypocritical, right? That somewhere, even if I 100% polar disagree with you and you disagree with my very right to be and to be who I am, somewhere in there's some good intention. That's just me. You know, that's what I do to get through the day. And so I've been really trying to figure that out and reading some stuff about the Pharisees and things, and when sort of the rules and laws become more important than sort of the creator and love and what happens. And this is it. This is what happens. And so, yeah, I don't quite get it. That's not the way I think. That's not the way I operate. You know, actions matter, and consistency between thought, you know, spirit and action matters to me. So I don't quite get that.
So were you talking about the question that was just put up?
I didn't see it. I should put my glasses on.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, let's go to a break and talk more because we need to talk about this. And it's great to have Robert Lilligren back on. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a 5-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry. Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
This is Santita Jackson. Monday through Friday, 6 to 8 a.m. Central, we'll bring you the best progressive talkers, thinkers, and doers on AM 950, Minnesota's progressive voice.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality. And for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Schroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Schroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Is your remote workforce putting your company at risk? Cyber criminals are targeting your employees with COVID-19-inspired emails and attacking businesses like yours. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. Rimark has the tools and expertise to enable your employees to work securely from home. If you need help getting your staff to work remotely and securely, call 651-328-8900 or go to RimarkIT.com. That's 651-328-8900 or RimarkIT.com.
The Park Tavern in St. Louis Park is your summer destination. The patio is amazing, perfect for you and your friends to grab dinner and drinks. Enjoy a game of cornhole while you indulge in the great food. The full Park Tavern menu is available outside. The Park Tavern also has live music on the patio every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and even some Mondays through the summer. Reservations are highly recommended. And if the weather does turn, the bowling lanes at the Park Tavern are always open and are spectacular. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, the perfect summer is waiting for you at the Park Tavern.
Hi, I'm Claire Ferreira, president and owner of Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. My grandfather started Standard over 90 years ago, and we've been a family-owned company ever since, serving over 500,000 of our fellow Minnesotans. I'm proud to be the fourth generation of my family working in our business. And when we say we treat our employees and clients like family, we truly mean it. See how we can help your family stay comfortable all year long at standardheating.com. That's standardheating.com.
Hi, folks. This is Kirk Bangstad from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell Choice Hard Seltzer. Choice is an all-natural, 105-calorie grapefruit-flavored hard seltzer for those who believe that a woman's reproductive decision should remain a private matter between her and her doctor. When you purchase Choice Hard Seltzer, 5% of the proceeds go to support reproductive rights organizations in Minnesota.
Drink progressively with Minocqua Brewing. Get their Choice Hard Seltzer at Top 10 Liquors in St. Louis Park and Stinson Wine, Beer, and Spirits in Northeast Minneapolis. Find other Twin Cities locations at MinocquaBrewingCompany.com.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for cloudy skies overnight with a low around 75. Thursday, a chance for rain with a high near 90. And Friday, sunny with a high around 82.
It's Angela Warner from Warner Stallion here letting you know that this is it. Our lowest prices of the season with 5% savings you won't find anywhere else on refrigerators, washers, and dryers. Oh, and free dishwasher installation, too. Shop your local Warner Stallion today.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Thank you, Wendy. And we're here with Robert Lilligren, a CEO of the Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And we like to share and talk with Robert about what's going on nationally and locally. And I know there's a lot of things that are happening. And I want to give you an opportunity because, you know, part of our charm, Robert, is that we just kind of talk. But our other part of the charm is that you have a lot of things going on in there, and I want to make sure I get to those. There's a lot of great things happening on the Franklin Corridor and what your organization is doing and all the other organizations up there in the Twin Cities and Franklin Avenue.
Well, you're very kind, Robert. I'm glad you think that we have charm. I hope that the people listening think that we do. So yeah, you're right. We have a lot going on. And, you know, here, the organization that I work for, Native American Community Development Institute, NACD, is a technically called an asset-based community development agent. And we're a systems change organization, right? And so we work on all different levels. We work at the community level. We work at the sort of convening level. We work at the policy level. Simultaneously. And so today you are at the market, the Four Sisters Farmers Market, which is, you know, one of our signature food sovereignty, healthy food kind of initiatives. And that's great. We also work in Make Voting a Tradition, as I talked earlier, getting people involved in the political process, holding elected officials accountable. Other big project is our All My Relations Arts Gallery, which is a teeny tiny gallery, but really outsized in its importance and influence in contemporary Native arts. And so the fact that we're literally in community and grounded in community and then working on all these different levels simultaneously, it really gives us the ability to sort of impact the systems that were the oppressive systems of the colonizer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always like to come over to Minneapolis, because Wendy knows it's very scary for me to go to Minneapolis, you know, because I'm in my little 5-block radius here in St. Paul. And she's really helped me widen my horizons and get into the big city over there. But, you know, I just love, like, the coffee shop, the whole vibe, running into people, and knowing the community. And it's just a great place, the coffee shop and the art gallery and your offices and the people you work with. It's just I wish people could experience it. And I think the people that do, the people that I know in Wisconsin that do, are really, really impressed.
Folks do. Folks come far and wide to the gallery, especially the coffee shop, is Powwow Grounds that Bob's talking about. It's sort of one of the public community gathering spaces. It's an incredible space, and it's a great place to work. And it's what we're always trying to give Native folks opportunities, like the vendors at the market that you saw today, the artists. We create lots of Native artists opportunities. And I would love to talk about the call for authors that we have going on through the gallery. And this is a continuation. It's sort of our second installment of our Native Authors program. And this is an incredible partner. We do everything in partnership. We do not exist without partnership. And we launched this in a partnership with Dakota author Diane Wilson. We had the first Native Authors course. She was very interested in setting up a cohort and creating a curriculum where Native authors could get to publishing. That mm-hmm. was the goal. And so the first installment was incredibly successful. Diane is now consulting on the second one. We'll have a different mentor, and we are looking for new authors to be part of this cohort. And the authors that were part of the first cohort are having great successes with their work. And so folks can either go to the NACDI website, All My Relations website, or Facebook pages for more details. But now is the time to apply. And this cohort is focused at all kinds of writers, emerging writers, something mm-hmm. handwritten on a piece of paper. This is not for people who are very advanced in their careers. You can be, and you'll benefit from participating. But I would really encourage Native authors at all levels, or people who are interested in being a professional author, a published author, to apply. And that's very much sort of NACDI's model. We do a lot of these kind of cohorts, or bringing people together, creating opportunities. And with partners like Diane Wilson and others, it's high caliber resources available to those who participate.
That's great. And think about this. And I try to tell Ogma this too, because she's a really talented writer. And I've had so many interesting things happen to me since I quit drinking, or either that, or they always were happening to me and I just didn't know. but all these things that have happened to me over the years, and you just figure, if you write 2 pages a day, by a year, that's that's 600 and almost 700 pages. And you could go from there and get help by editing it. And 2 pages sounds very doable.
Wow. Ogama, are you considering applying?
I did see it and considered applying. I kind of have a lot on my plate right now, so it'd be a little bit tricky to do it. But believe me, my heart is calling for me to do it. So,
wow, that would be very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember this, Robert, but when Ogma first started working with us, and we talked about this last week, but when she started working with us, she used to just do a story. She'd write a story and do 8 minutes. And Wendy and I were talking about her first story was about her having 2 birthdays. And it was just like, that was her applying for a job on Native Roots Radio. And it was like, wow, that's really good. Let's play it. You know?
Very cool.
Yeah. So she wrote a lot for us prior to going 5 days a week.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool. In another sort of benefit to the community that spun out of our Native Authors program and our partnership with Diane Wilson is, you know, she sadly lost her spouse this year, Jen Denwiney, you know, renowned Native artists. And she, we have now partnered with Diane, and she's establishing the Jim Denamy Memorial Scholarship. And we just made our first award. The scholarship just made its first award. And I can't remember if it's been publicly announced, so I feel uncomfortable just saying it right here.
Just give us the initials of the person. No,
JT. And I think it has been announced. And I think, but again, that was just because we were all kind of there together working in partnership. And this is something NACTI does a fair amount, these sort of fiscal agent kind of relationships, just so the people who are trying to do the work, like Diane wanted to, establish this memorial scholarship. You know, she doesn't have to get bogged down in the financials and stuff. So, that's just been a really exciting partnership. This is the first of what I'm sure will be many awards, and I hope years of a successful partnership.
Well, Wendy, I want to ask Wendy. Wendy is retired now, Robert, as you know, and she's been painting like a mad person, which has been awesome. Wendy, did you ever think about – we've been married for 21 years. I'm going to ask her this first question ever. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
I have. Yes, okay. I have. I think everybody in themselves feels like they could write a book, to, even if it's just about their life, how they were brought up, the experiences that they had. I think everybody has something to share with somebody. You know, right now I'm really enjoying painting and my art, you know, being artistic, mm-hmm. and that kind of. So I've been painting a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, Robert. Robert has a heck of a story. I'm sure you've thought about writing a book, or maybe I could write it for you.
No, sure, if you want to write it, but once or twice, you know. I really enjoy writing. I just wish I had more time to do it. I love telling stories. And
two pages a day, Robert. 2 pages a day. By the end of the year, you'll have a book.
Yeah, that's true. 2 pages a day. So, So it's very exciting. Very exciting. The scholarship award.
So what's going on with the river? I know a lot of cool things that you've been working with. What's an update on that?
Well, so there's all kinds of stuff going along the river, right? And I just think there's a growing awareness in the non-native community of the importance of water, you know, because of things like Line 3 and Standing Rock. I think there's just this growing awareness. And I think there's a growing awareness that solutions to a lot of the challenges we have now are indigenous, you know, and whether that's indigenous like this or indigenous to wherever in the world, you know, we've gotten so far from sort of the indigenous ways, life ways, right? And so the particular piece of work that we were talking about today along the river is right down in the Minneapolis Central Riverfront. There's a now abandoned or unneeded lock and dam right at the falls, right there in Minneapolis. And it was a really eminently important and sacred site to the Dakota people and to the earlier people here that was completely desecrated and destroyed through colonization and industrialization. And so now that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers doesn't need this lock anymore, they're going to transfer the ownership of it to the city of Minneapolis. And from there, we'll see where it goes. But for the last couple of years, our organization, NACTI, has been involved in working with the Friends of the Falls, which is sort of a power board and group of some of the wealthiest people in the city, the descendants of the colonizers. And they are really committed to centering Native voices and putting Native voices in the lead. And so NACTI has been working to convene, engaging Native communities, engage the Dakota tribes. We've established what's called a Native Partnership Council that started with this great conversations with these partnership councils, where some of the leading thinkers around water, around culture, language, primarily Dakota, primarily women at the table. And it's something different from any kind of planning process I've been part of, and I've been part of hundreds of place-based planning, maybe thousands in my life. And this is different. And everyone involved with it says it's different. And so we talk about the project in seasons rather than phases or something to try to indigenize the approach. We're just ending a season and about to start a new one. We've convened this Native Partnership Council 10 times. We have these beautiful Native values that are driving our work. And we're starting to put sort of design pen to paper about what can happen in this piece of property. Is it a potential land back situation? What it might look like? And for me, and I can't see how much time we have, but I just wanted to say really quickly, thank you. We just had our 10th Native Partnership Council meeting, and I got really emotional and kind of passionate about this idea of healing, you know, and healing parallel trauma. And, you know, it's not just Native folks. Could this be a Dakota center for healing and healing for white people? And it's just, there's all this possibility there. And this city needs to heal. We have probably any city in the nation right now. We need to heal. And I just feel really strongly that this, what's going on right there at the river, right there at the falls, could be one of those spots where that healing really starts, that truth telling that can lead to reconciliation. So I am hopeful.
Wow, Robert, we've missed you, and thank you for the update. Really exciting, and we'll see you really soon. We'll see you next week. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Robert Lilligren.
Stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
We're sad wolves today.
Yeah.
Thanks, Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It really is depressing.
Wow.
And it's just the beginning. It really is just the beginning of what's going to happen. So we're in for it. We really are.
Well, like you just said, Wendy, you know, listen to what they said. Clarence Thomas said exactly what's going to happen next, and I believe what they say. So. You know, gay marriage, you know, all these other things, they're coming at it and they're coming after it, and they're going to try and do whatever they can. But I see the pictures for your sacred animal section or sacred relatives. Mm-hmm. And so I can't wait to hear what you're going to do here, because we always have fun facts, It's Fun Fact Friday on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Well, I do have some good news.
Yeah.
If I have any good news, I do have some good news today. So the Animal Humane Society, it's different than the Humane Society of the United States. So the Animal Humane Society in Minnesota is organizations. It's in three different places. One is in Coon Rapids, one is in Golden Valley, and one is in Woodbury. They adopt out animals. They adopt out cats and dogs and other animals. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, which is different. We work on policy and laws and to get things changed, by changing laws and policies for animals. We don't adopt out animals. But the good news is that the Animal Humane Society of Minnesota, they have a beagle update. So the beagle update is that this past weekend, 23 beagles ranging in ages from 8 years to 2 months old found a second chance at the Animal Humane Society after being relinquished from an animal testing facility. Now, I'm just going to stop there because, unfortunately, most of the time when the animals are finished with their experimentation that they undergo, they are humanely euthanized and they never get the chance to live in a home. Things are changing, and there's laws being passed now that require the animals to be released after experimentation. So some still need ongoing care as we prepare them for spay and neuter surgery and provide them with the specialized medical and behavioral care each needs. And I'll stop there again. The behavioral needs of these animals are unbelievable. These dogs, one I'm going to be talking about specifically, her name is Claire, and she's the three-year-old beagle, gave us an amazing surprise when she gave birth to four healthy and adorable puppies just a couple of days ago. So this is Claire, and she was in the testing facility for 3 years. And they do breed the dogs there so that their puppies will grow up in that facility and then be tested on. So they're tested on all different kinds of things, you know, pesticides, chemicals, cosmetics, all kinds of different things. But I'm really happy that these, 23 beagles were released and they are up for adoption. So you can call the Coon Rapids, Golden Valley, or Woodbury locations if you're interested in one of these dogs. The puppies are just adorable. So the names of the puppies are Linus, Woodstock, Rerun, and Peppermint Patty. They have joined the shelter family and will be under the watchful eye of a foster volunteer until mom and pups are ready for adoption. And I just love the story. Each and every one of these dogs now knows what it means to be loved, cared for, and protected. And it's all because of the animal lovers in our community. We need to thank everybody, right, for sharing, for bringing awareness, for writing emails, for sending texts, for getting in touch with these facilities and demanding that these beagles and these animals be released to loving homes. And we want to make sure that they are they'll going to make sure that they're adopted out to wonderful families. So, and beagles are one of the most common breed for experiments, but it's not because scientists view them as the best model for human disease. Rather, beagles are convenient to use because they are docile and small, allowing for small animals to be housed and cared for, uses less space and money. And these dogs are on the docile side, so you know you could pretty much do what you want. We still live in the shadow of the radioactive beagles, and that's a long story. I'm not going to get into that right now. Nearly 60,000 dogs are used in research, testing, and education in the United States each year, and the vast majority of these dogs are beagles. Statistics are staggering. staggering. Here's another one that says approximately 70,000 dogs are used in research lab experiments every year. And of those, 96% are beagles, according to the California-based organization called Beagle Freedom Project. I love this organization. They really have done so much work in changing policies and getting these laws in place where these facilities do have to relinquish the dogs and cats after experimentations to shelters instead of just putting them to sleep. And I just want to say, give a shout out to the Humane Society of the United States because they send in undercover investigators that get hired to these organizations as workers, right? And they go in there with recordings and videotapes, and they bring out the truth. They have found many beagles and other animals being horrifically treated in laboratories for testing of all types of things, like I said before, including cosmetics and pesticides and all different kinds of chemicals. I talk about this a lot on the show, that exactly, Alice, thank you. Torture is not research. You're exactly right. And these animals are, you know, if you go online and if you're brave enough to read about what kind of experiments happen to the dogs and how they are treated, it is torture and it is not research. So I encourage everyone to get a free app on their phone. You could get it for your iPhone or your Android. It's called Cruelty Cutter. It's free. And what you do is you scan the barcode of the products that you want to buy. So anytime I go buy shampoo, conditioner, any kind of makeup, and I scan the barcodes and it will tell me, it'll say bite back if it is tested on animals, if the item's tested on animals, or it'll say this product is cruelty free. If it is an item that is tested on animals, you just click another little button and it will give you alternatives that you could use that are cruelty-free and safe. So the majority, I can't say that every single item that I buy is cruelty-free because most of the drugs that we buy, ibuprofen, Tylenol, are always tested on animals. But for the items that I can really, and I try to buy all chemically free, like cleaning products too. So stuff that is not tested on animals. So I do my very best to do that. And all my cosmetics, there is not one cosmetic that I buy that, is tested on an animal. So yeah. So I'm happy for these dogs. If you can, call the Animal Humane Society of Minnesota in Coon Rapids, Golden Valley, or Woodbury if you're interested in one of these beagles.
Hey, Pinagigi, Wendy, great job as always. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to this show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It has the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. Free Leonard Peltier, we're still here. We are the seventh generation.